You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today's show is going to be my commentary about the Pope Francis's address to the U.S. Congress. It was an historic event because this is the first time a pope has addressed the joint session of Congress. Usually in January, the president, at least in recent years, it wasn't initially the tradition in the United States, addresses a joint session. But this is a little unusual because it's Pope Francis. He's head of the Catholic Church, and the Catholic Church has 1.2 billion Catholics worldwide. After Islam, which has approximately 1.6 billion, it's the second largest faith or religion in the world, and both are growing. Now, one thing I was initially debating, should I play, like I did yesterday, as short segments? And frankly, I haven't had the time to do it. I have listened to large portions of it, but more importantly, what I did was read the entire address. And certain things popped out. And what I'm going to do is read first the Pope's words, followed by my own commentary. Here's my dilemma. There are a lot of well-meaning, good-intentioned people, and that includes the Pope. And the world is full of well-meaning, well-intentioned people. The problem is they recommend actions that have consequences and may not get the results that they want. For me, results very much count and matter, and I don't want so-called unintended consequences. And the problem I have with this Pope is, it's very clear, his experience is with liberation theology. And they advocated, and they have a long history in both South America and Latin America, and it was the Jesuit order, which in Argentina, the Pope was head of prior to becoming an archbishop and then a cardinal and subsequently elected Pope. He has experience of, and there's been a lot of criticism of his heading of that order. He will even admit he was rather too young to be head of it and made mistakes, and that's important background. So what I've done is I have, for your information, and for those that are new listeners, the way you listen to the Pronk Pop Show is to go to my companion blog, PronkPops.wordpress.com. That's PronkPops, PronkPops.wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll see a picture of me in the studio, but underneath, you'll have links to the last 60 to 80 shows, followed by some of the show prep. And that can be photographs. It can be videos, and there are a lot of videos here, and it can be news articles and links to more information and background information. So this one is rather top-heavy. I have a lot of information. But if you look at the title, Pope Francis is trying to sell us the socialism of the Jesuit liberation theology and social justice. As far as I'm concerned, that's no sale. I'm not buying it at all. Now, some of you will say, well, the Pope is not a salesman. I beg to differ. He uses a word. He doesn't use sales or presentation. But if you read his speech, throughout the speech, he uses several phrases, common phrases. One of them, the important one, is dialogue. Dialogue. He wants to dialogue. The problem is what he's doing is not a dialogue, it's a monologue. Speeches and addresses are really not an exchange of ideas. And there's really what he's doing is presenting what he thinks should happen. And unfortunately for this Pope, I dare say that the majority of Americans are not buying what the Pope is saying. Now, I want to be candid here. The Pope is, his native language is Spanish. And when he does make a good effort to speak English, but he's slow in doing it, and there is an accent. And for many people, it's hard to simply follow. So instead, what I'm going to do is read key passages. I'm not going to start necessarily at the first of the paragraph, but where I think it should start. This is the Pope's words in the prepared text. Here, together with their representatives, I would like to take this opportunity to dialogue with the many thousands of men and women who strive each day to do an honest day's work, to bring home their daily bread, to save money, and, one step at a time, to build a better life for their families. These are men and women who are not concerned simply with paying their taxes, but in their quiet way, sustain the life of society. They generate solidarity by their actions, and they create organizations which offer a helping hand to those most in need. I think that's an excellent statement, and I obviously agree with the sentiments of his statement. And it focuses on the family, because that is the one entity that is under attack in the United States. People of faith and people that have families, it's the family and faiths that are being attacked worldwide, including in the United States. We need strong families. That's why I was very encouraged towards the end of his speech that the Pope amplified his thoughts on the family. Again, the Pope, I will end my visit to your country in Philadelphia, where I will take part in the World Meeting of Families. It is my wish that throughout my visit, the family should be a recurrent theme. How essential a family has been to the building of this country, and how worthy it remains of our support and encouragement. Yet I cannot hide my concern for the family, which is threatened, perhaps as never before, from within and without. Fundamental relationships are being called into question, as is the very basis of marriage and the family. I can only reiterate the importance and, above all, the richness and the beauty of the family life. Again, this is a statement that I think the overwhelming majority of Americans, including myself, agree with. I wish, though, that he had emphasized this in the beginning of his speech. At one time, most families in the United States had both a mother and father as well as children. Today, there are millions, tens of millions of families that are headed by one parent, and that parent is usually the mother. And part of the reason for that is the way welfare is handled in this country and benefits are handed out. It doesn't encourage a father being in the home because you can lose your benefits. What really needs to be talked about and amplified, and I wish the Pope had done this, is what's impacting the family. The family is absolutely crucial because where you have a strong family, the children of that family usually turn out well, sometimes very well. And that truly has been probably the most valuable asset that the United States has. It's its families. And we need to strengthen the families by making sure, especially when there are young children or even teenagers involved, that there's both a mother and father as part of that household. So again, I wish that the Pope had spent a little bit more time on this. At least he's calling attention to the family. And he goes on to amplify, I would like to call attention to those family members who are the most vulnerable, the young. For many of them, a future filled with countless possibilities beckons, yet so many others seem disoriented and aimless, trapped in a hopeless maze of violence, abuse, and despair. Their problems are our problems. We cannot avoid them. We need to face them together, to talk about them, and to seek effective solutions rather than getting bogged down in discussion. Again, I couldn't agree more. There's a lot of agreement that Americans will find in this speech if they take the time to read it, and I encourage you to read it. My problem is where the Pope gets into some of the specifics and his recommendations to us. There are two that we'll be probably focused in on the most, and that's regarding capital punishment as well as immigration. But before I get into that, There's something that I applaud the Pope again for saying, and this is a rather lengthy quote that I'm going to read to you before I give you my comments. But it's very, very important. All of us are quite aware of and deeply worried by the disturbing social and political situation in the world today. Our world is increasingly a place of violent conflict, hatred, and brutal atrocities committed even in the name of God and of religion. Let me stop right there. What he's referring to, and there are a number of examples of this, is the fact that in Syria and Iraq, as well as Libya, we have the Islamic State, as well as the groups affiliated with Al-Qaeda, such as Al-Nusra, that are killing people because they don't have the right religion. They're largely killing other Muslims that don't share their Sunni religion or their version of the Sunni Islamic, the branch of Islam that is Sunni, which is the majority. If you happen to be of a minority sect, namely Shia, which many, the majority in Iraq are, as well as the majority in the Islamic Republic of Iran are, they will kill you, usually right there and then. Or they'll make you a slave, torture you, and then kill you. That violence is going on. And let me be clear, it also extends to Christians. Christians have been fleeing both Syria and Iraq for a long time. There are probably very few left because they fled, but many that were not fast enough were killed. And the same has happened in Libya and Egypt. The Islamic religion practiced by fanatics has resulted in violence. Why most of this violence is directed primarily against people that share the Islamic faith, the violence is primarily against two sects of Islam, namely the Sunni and the Shia. But it goes even further, because the Islamic State, for example, are Salafist. There are some that are very peaceful Salafists, but this is an extreme version of it. They're fundamentalist, purist, and they believe what they're doing, they're required to do. You see, you have good and evil in the world. And when religion is used to persecute someone, it's just as deadly. And it is done and committed in the name of God and religion. So let me get back to the text that the Pope was saying. Our world is increasingly a place of violent conflict and hatred and brutal atrocities committed even in the name of God and religion. We know that no religion is immune from forms of individual delusion or ideological extremism. This means that we must be especially attentive to every type of fundamentalism, whether religious or of any other kind. A delicate balance is required to combat violence perpetrated in the name of religion and ideology or economic system, while also safeguarding religious freedom, intellectual freedom, and individual freedoms. Let me stop there before I continue. In a few minutes, I'll go into some of the suggestions, if you will, or recommendations of the Pope specifically that I don't agree with. And the reason why I read this paragraph first is we all have experiences, education. We have a history. It's in our heads. It's in our hearts. It impacts the course of actions that we take. It also impacts whether or not we're successful or not. But you need to understand that even if you think you have the right idea, there are other people that simply disagree with you. And I think the Pope understands that. My concern is, it's abundantly clear listening to his statements that he's for social justice. I think he's a socialist at heart and doesn't seem to appreciate where that has led in the past. And where that has led is to genocides and democides, death by government, and just take the three largest. Adolf Hitler, National Socialism, killed about 21 million. Joseph Stalin, head of the Soviet Union, killed 62 million dead. And Mao, estimated about 49 million. I've seen a range of estimates that have been a little lower, a little higher. My point is this. These were all initially well-meaning people, good-intentioned people, but they're fanatics. They believe they were right. They believe their actions were justified, and that killed millions of people. These three people are monsters, and many people paid with their lives. Many other people that didn't die were affected because family members were killed. And all of them have one common denominator. They're various forms of collectivism, and more specifically, socialism. National socialism, Marxist-Leninist socialism, and communist socialism. They believed in change. They believed in hope. They believed in social justice. And what resulted? Violence and death. Mass murder. Which gets me back to my point. Well-meaning, good-intentioned people will support movements that lead down the road to serfdom and lead to the gas chambers, the gulags, the executions in a cell or against the wall, or mass famines where people starve to death, which is not a pleasant death. And all three of these leaders were collectivists, were socialists, and we're talking deaths totaling over 100 million. Socialism and those who advocate it, as well as social justice, forget that to impose that system requires first coercion and ultimately force. That's why the American people value liberty above all else and emphasize the individual, not the collective. Unfortunately, the Pope does not. He is a collectivist, a well-meaning collectivist, good-intention collectivist, but he's still recommending programs and policies that can lead and have led in the past to the deaths of millions and the torture and wounding of millions more. That's why I say you have to be aware of what the results are, but equally important, what are the intended as well as unintended consequences are. These deaths were intended. I don't think any of them started out to kill millions, but that's where they ended up, because they were fanatics, just like the Islamic State is today, just like the Islamic Republic, the mullahs, and the supreme leader are today. The history of mankind is full of examples of this. Some were genocides, some were democides, which is a broader category where the government has killed usually millions of people. And these are just three examples. There's a long list of them. And that's why I'm concerned. See, one of the things that the Pope came out for was for the abolition of the death penalty. And I should have really introduced something else first, but I'm going to jump right into it. And again, these are the Pope's words. This conviction has led me from the beginning of my ministry to advocate at different levels for the global abolition of the death penalty. I am convinced that this way is best, since every life is sacred. Every human person is endowed with an inalienable dignity, and society can only benefit from the rehabilitation of those convicted of crimes. Recently, my brother bishops here in the United States renewed their call for the abolition of the death penalty. Not only do I support them, but I also offer encouragement to all those who are convinced that a just and necessary punishment must never exclude the dimension of hope and the goal of rehabilitation. Again, there's a problem. There is evil in the world, and there are people that will kill unless restrained. There is a great temptation to grant mercy. But what does that entail? Let's say the United States did away with the death penalty. What would happen? There would be thousands of people that are currently on death row that will stay on death row for their entire life. This costs society a lot of money, anywhere from $50,000 to $60,000 minimum per year for what could be 30, 40, 50, or 60 years or more. Because many of these murders are committed by young people in their teens, in their 20s, in their 30s. I'm for compassion, I'm for mercy, and there are extenuating circumstances. But I think the focus should be on the lives of those people that were murdered, not on the murderer or the person that committed the homicide. I know there are countries in Europe that have done away with the death penalty. And I know the Catholic Church and its bishops is trying to do away with the death penalty. And you can get an argument into whether or not having capital punishment is a deterrent. I think it is, but there are other people I know that feel it isn't. I think one of the reasons capital punishment has become a less of a deterrent is the fact that justice is not swift. Texas still has the death penalty, and we execute people, I would say, at least once a month, if not once a week, because we have people that are killing, murdering, mostly innocent people. Sometimes you'll get fights that lead to a death. And remember, we have a jury trial, as well as, should the person be found guilty of homicide, a separate consideration is what would be a just sentence. Is it death? Is it life, a lifetime in prison? The problem is justice is not swift. Even if the jury finds the person guilty and the punishment is death, it typically takes 5, 10, 15 years or longer before the punishment is carried out. And because of that, it makes it less of a deterrent. I'm for the sanctity of life, but I wish that the Pope had spent more time talking about the deaths of the truly innocent. And what I'm talking about is every day between 1,000 to 3,000 babies are being killed in abortion clinics throughout the United States. Why they've stopped collecting statistics, and the trend was towards fewer abortions, it was still upwards of a million abortions in just the United States every year. In other words, abortion is not rare in the United States. It's certainly not rare in Europe, China, and other nations. Those are the truly innocent that are being killed with the help of their mothers that go to these abortion clinics where doctors kill the babies. I was hoping that the Pope would speak out. Maybe he was trying to be diplomatic. But it's hard to ignore the fact that we have a president together with a presidential candidate, namely Hillary Clinton, that are both big supporters of Planned Parenthood, that have killed more blacks and Hispanics babies, Planned Parenthood has, as well as the other abortion clinics, than the executions in Texas. So I agree with the Pope's emphasis on the family. I wish he had just emphasized a lot more the problem that abortion is today in the United States as well as worldwide. Babies in the womb need to be protected. They are the young, the very young. And because they're not, the respect for life has been eroding. And I think also what it's been eroding is the family. And that's one of the areas I wish he had said a lot more in. He was silent. Oh, you can read into it that he was concerned about it. But in certain instances, you need to be specific. Yes, it would not have gone over very well with the Democrats and some of the Republicans in that chamber. It certainly would not have gone over well with President Obama or Hillary Clinton and some of the other candidates, whether Democrat or Republican, that are pro-abortion or, as they like to call it, pro-choice. So I believe in the sanctity of life, but I think the focus should be on those lives that are taken, whether it's the young baby in the womb or the victims of the murderers that kill people. Values are important. And when you devalue life by making abortions a common event in the United States, that cheapens life and leads to crimes. Even though the murder rate has been dropping, it's still up there. It's about 10, 11,000. And another thing I would hope the Pope would have spoken about was the fact that a disproportionate amount of those murders are black-on-black murders. Blacks in this country represent somewhere between 12 and 13% of the population, but are responsible for over 50% of the homicides. And of those homicides, over 90%, closer to 95%, are black-on-black homicides. And again, it's the innocent blacks in their community that are the victims. This is a dialogue that I wish the Pope had started. Call it a lost opportunity. And it was crying out to be discussed. Oh yes, President Obama and many of the Democratic Party and even a few in the Republican Party would not have liked that. The Pope should have emphasized it. And again, it's a missed opportunity because we very much need a national conversation on it. And what better place and what better person to start that conversation, a serious conversation, than Pope Francis. Now, there's one part of this speech that I especially liked, and that was when he was dealing with businesses. Let me start at the very top of the paragraph. It goes without saying that part of this great effort is the creation and distribution of wealth. The right use of natural resources, the proper application of technology, and the harnessing of the spirit of enterprise are essential elements of an economy which seeks to be modern, inclusive, and sustainable. Business is a noble vocation directed to producing wealth and improving the world. It can be a fruitful source of prosperity for the area in which it operates, especially if it sees the creation of jobs as an essential part of its service to the common good. He's quoting from Laudato Si, page 129. And he continued, "This common good also includes the earth, a central theme of the encyclical which I wrote in order to enter into dialogue with people about our common home." Here is where he starts off very well. Wealth creation is done in the private sector. It's not done by government. I'm glad the Pope recognizes that. Because if you truly want to lift people out of poverty, raise the standard of living of a nation's people, you need a expanding, growing private sector. And the driver for that is the entrepreneur, the individual that risks his time and money to start a business and goes into the factors of production market, namely for labor, land, natural resources, capital, as well as for managerial personnel, entrepreneurs. He risks his time and money to first purchase those scarce resources and then use them to convert to goods and services that people need. And to the extent that these entrepreneurs are successful, not only is wealth created and income is created, but jobs are created. And this is done by a free market capitalist economy, not a command and control economy that you've had with socialism or communism and the various types that you have. The reason why a few nations, including the United States, have the highest standard of living is the fact that we've promoted a free enterprise market system, not a command and control system, which has historically failed. Oh, they had well-meaning, good-intentioned people, but they simply were unable to deliver the goods and the services. And there's a lesson there that I don't think this Pope has gotten through. The problem that the Catholic Church has had, including this Pope, is to understand economics, and more specifically, the economics of a free enterprise economy, where the market is used as a pricing system for allocating resources, as well as determining what goods and services are produced. So at least he recognized the importance of business. Where I think he makes a mistake, and he uses this phrase, and I think this is being a little bit too subtle, too clever by half. He keeps using the phrase. He used it in his White House speech to the president and the guests that were on the South Lawn. Common home. That's a home is, people usually like their home. I'm not sure what a common home is, but I know what he's talking about. Or at least I think I do. I could be wrong. I've made mistakes. What he's talking about is the planet. That's a code word for planet. Because he goes on to say, the common good also includes the earth, a central theme of the encyclical, which I recently wrote in order to, and here's that word again, quote, enter into a dialogue with all the people about our common home. And then a quote, we need a conversation which includes everyone, since the environmental challenge we are undergoing and its human roots concern and affect us all. Well, that's true, but the question is, what are you recommending to do about it? And what he wants to do is limit carbon dioxide emissions. That's why he's concerned about climate change. And this gets into another area. It's clear listening to him that he doesn't have a basic grasp of the science, disregarding for a moment the economics. And this gets back to my major point. It's not good enough to be well-meaning. It's not good enough to have good intentions. And he doesn't have a monopoly on wisdom. A lot of people disagree with this Pope on his views on climate change, his apparent bias towards socialism as the answer, and his repetition. Notice, he typically does not, he'll use the justice word over and over again. He doesn't say social justice, because why? For a lot of people, including me, that's a red flag, because we know where social justice ends, and it ends in executions. It ends with deaths of people, because to enforce social justice, what do you need? You need coercion and force. So it might be rather, how should I say, attractive to some people. Oh, he's just for justice. Well, how are you going to get that justice? Oh, we're going to steal somebody's property. That usually involves coercion and force. And that's what we're talking about. He doesn't say it that way. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not steal. Yet that, unfortunately, is at the core of social justice. And who is to decide what is socially just? You see, he wants to replace the free market capitalist system with a command and control system under socialism, where a small group of people determine what is produced and how it's produced and who gets it. That's what socialism is about, and that's where social justice leads. So while he initially praises business, I think at his heart, he has a rather negative view of both free market capitalism and businesses. I don't share that view, because the reason the United States and some of the countries in Western Europe have the highest standard of living and the highest output per capita output is because they truly believe in free market capitalism and not the intervention of the state, namely the government, in the economy. I'm looking at the clock. I'm probably going to go another 10 to 15 minutes. Now, he gave several examples of people that he admired. Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King, Dorothy Day, and Thomas Merton. Most people know of Abraham Lincoln and Martin Luther King, and I'm sure the Republican in the House appreciated the reference to King. Many, however, do not know who the Dorothy Day is. I did. And again, I'm using her as an example. She was a very idealistic, well-meaning, well-intentioned person, converted to Catholicism, was interested in journalism and published the Catholic Worker, similar to the Daily Worker that the communists were putting out. And she really helped the poor. And there's a move to make her a saint. That process has started. Whether or not that happens is not the point. Dorothy Day is an excellent example of the challenge where you have someone that's trying to feed the poor. And she was feeding people that simply didn't have a job, were down and out on their luck, didn't have a place to stay. And many Americans, over time, find themselves in that position. And that's why it's important to have a strong family. You see, at one time when we didn't have the welfare state, which we have today, what we have in the United States today is the warfare and welfare state. You see, the United States is well on that road to serfdom, to socialism. And what has happened? We spend more money on entitlements, welfare program, and defense. That's about 3/4 of the budget. We've become a warfare and welfare state. At one time, there was little or no welfare, because the emphasis was on the individual, self-reliance, hard work, a strong worth ethic, and most importantly, a strong family. So should you get in a situation where you find yourself suddenly unemployed, out in the street, your first resort was to your family. And if you didn't have a family, it was to your church or a local community group. It wasn't the government. Today, the view is, I'm owed, I'm entitled to food stamps. I'm entitled to Section 8 housing. I'm entitled to supplemental security income. I'm entitled to an earned income credit. What does that foster? It fosters a dependence on government, a dependence on the state. It does not encourage self-reliance. It does not encourage a strong work ethic. And that's the danger. So while good intentions are commendable, it would be more commendable if that person had a job, or you started a business where not only you had a job, but you can employ people. And that's not the role of government. You see, the best welfare program is a job, a good paying job with benefits, so you can support a family as well as take care of the basic needs, the essentials of life. Food, clothing, a roof over your head, transportation, and the other necessities of life that you need in a modern economy. Because we have a free enterprise market system, although it's being challenged by bigger and bigger government, we still have a very prosperous and growing economy. It could be growing a lot faster, and I wish it did, because a 1% difference in growth rate, when you look at it over 70, 80 years, has a great impact on the standard of living. It doesn't make much difference in the short run. But if you run the numbers, you quickly see that in the long run, that 1%, and let me explain what I mean. Assume for a minute that the economy is going to fluctuate. You're going to have different growth rates of the economy. What we're talking here is about the real gross domestic product of the economy. And whatever that rate is over a 60, 70-year period, if it's just 1% less, it's going to make a dramatic difference in the standard of living. And that's why having the right economic policies, the right economic incentives are so important. Because where you have those in place and where government is not predominating, and that's what it is today, in most European countries, government at all levels is over 50%. The United States, it's approaching that. When you add city, state, county, as well as federal, and all the taxes you have to pay, what is happening is government is spending too much money. And the impact is felt in the growth of the economy. And that impacts the standard of living, which in turn means those that are in poverty find it difficult to get out of poverty. The economic history is very, very clear. What has really helped all people in the world today and given them a rising standard of living is not socialism, is not communism, and really it's not the welfare state. It's private enterprise where you have businesses run by an entrepreneur that take the risk and provide goods and services that the consumer wants, where the consumer is sovereign. In other words, the consumer determines what they want to buy and not the state. The problem is the Pope's recommendations lead me to believe that while he's good intentions, he has a serious lack of understanding of economics, how the system works, and who ultimately provides the benefits that if the government would just get out of the way would lead to the decline in poverty and ultimately its elimination, where the standard of living in all countries would be at or above the standard of living in the United States today. Today, the United States is one of the best countries to be poor in because we have many, unfortunately too many, welfare programs. We care for the needy. We care for those that can't help themselves. But the problem is there are too many people that take advantage of the system, that can work and don't work, that will take advantage of getting food stamps. Good intentions are not enough. Results matter, results count, and you need to avoid the negative consequences. And the biggest negative consequences, and there are several, is dependence on the government, which means they tell you, you lose your liberty as to what you can eat, where you can live, what you can drive, because they know better. And that's what we have today. We have a warfare and welfare state, and it would only be worse if we had socialism or pursued the goal of social justice. Because down that road, and we're far down that road today, lies serfdom, where you end up working for the government 5-6 months a year. Even in the Middle Ages, you didn't work that long for your master or lord. But that's where we've come to. Add up all the taxes you pay and what percentage of your income is taken by the state. And I'm getting the distinct impression why this Pope would like to dialogue. He's not dialoguing, by the way. He's making a presentation to the masses without any discussion, without any debate, without any objections. And there'll be people that will fall for this. I'm not falling for it because I know my economics, I know my history, and I also know the science. And this Pope is rather derelict in his duties in becoming informed on all three subjects, and that's not acceptable. You would think at this age he would have learned and had that experience, but apparently he hasn't. Now, there's one other, and I'm only going to spend a minute on this. I need to wrap it up. It's apparent that he's fallen for the hoax of climate change. And he likes to refer to it as pollution. Carbon dioxide, sir, is not pollution. It's a trace gas. Yes, it's doubled, but it's been much, much higher in the past. I'm not going to do another show on climate change. I've done at least half a dozen. And he's fallen for this save the planet nonsense, although he's calling it a common home. The problem is the planet kills people. Earthquakes, volcanoes erupting, floods, bad weather. The planet can take care of itself. What I'm worried about is man. What I'm really worried about are tyrants and dictators that are using this. And that's what they're doing. They're using this narrative that man is responsible for climate change when that is simply not true. It's not a consensus of science. It's certainly not a consensus of those that are experts on climate. This is being used by the green movement to cripple capitalism, to cripple the free market system that has provided not only the people of the United States, but the people of the world, a higher and higher standard of living. Yet he's falling for it. I don't think he's falling for it because I think he's part of the green movement. And what I mean by that, and I said it in the last show, they're watermelons. And this Pope is a watermelon Pope. He's green on the outside, but he's red on the inside. And by red, I mean he recommends socialism and social justice. And down that road lies serfdom and totalitarianism and genocides and democides. In other words, it's not enough, sir, to be well-meaning, good intentions. What you're recommending, if were truly implemented, would lead us way down that road. And I'm not going to go one step further down that road. Right now, the United States economy is stagnating, largely because of the expansion of the size, scope, and influence of the government. And what this Pope is recommending in the climate change area would take us further down that road by impacting, for example, the cost of electricity in the United States as well as the cost of fuel. Energy is a critical natural resource in terms of the fuel you need to make electrical power as well as gasoline. It is private enterprise and its investment in research and technology that enables the United States today, for all practical purposes, if it wanted to be energy independent. I don't think it needs to be energy independent, but we've been blessed by God with mass reserves of coal, oil, natural gas, uranium, as well as the inventive minds of individuals that gives us the technologies to find, exploit, and produce that energy, which is a critical factor of production, namely a natural resources that we need in producing goods and services as well as delivering those goods and services to heat our homes and air condition our homes. And it seems that the Pope has something against air conditioning. I suggest he come to Texas in August and tell the people here, how would you like to forego air conditioning? Air conditioning as well as heating has made life tolerable, not only in Texas, but throughout the world. Again, this is extreme environmentalism. I suggest he read his own words about religious fanatics, because I think he's become an environmental fanatic. Either that or he's drank the Kool-Aid. And I will use his own words. We know that no religion is immune from forms of individual delusion or ideological extremism. Yes, sir, that's true. And that describes the green movement. That describes the watermelons that are green on the outside, use environmentalism to try to destroy or kill the goose that lays the golden eggs and gives Americans the high standard of living that it has compared to the rest of the world. And I continue, quoting the Pope, "This means that we must be especially attentive to every type of fundamentalism, whether religious or of any other kind." Sir, your support of the climate alarmists is an example of this, because that alarmism is based on computer climate models whose projections and predictions have proven wrong again and again and again. And the American people are not going to fall for this, because at its core, what is it? It's trying to redistribute the wealth and the output of the American people to others. And that's what social justice is about. It's wealth redistribution. Because we think you have enough. Who are you, sir? And who's this group is going to decide that? It's always the tyrants. It's always the dictators. It's always the commissars, people in power, that replace the free market capitalist system with the command and control socialist communist system. So no sale. While you have some remarks that I would agree with, a matter of fact, many remarks in your speech I would agree with, when it comes to capital punishment, when it comes to your efforts to get the United States to fall for this climate change alarmism, no sale. And my only wish is you would spend more time focusing in on the innocent lives that are being killed in the United States today, namely babies in the womb, upwards of a million, at least hundreds of thousands, and more time on the family and the importance of the family, and also more time on the innocent victims that are killed by killers. And unfortunately, at least half of them are the black Americans whose community have thugs, many of them in gangs or peddling drugs, that have no value or place no value on human life and therefore kill and assault people daily. We have in this nation today black genocide. We have in this nation a president that supports the leading organization involved in this black genocide, namely Planned Parenthood. You needed to put this in a prominent place in your speech. I was happy and pleased that you emphasized the family, but I was profoundly disappointed in not putting more emphasis on the protection of the innocent, whether they be small babies or adults that are being killed throughout the United States. So enjoy your trip, but your dialogue, while interesting, has not persuaded me. You need to talk to Americans, and I mean truly talk. Not talk to, talk with. In other words, have a conversation, preferably in private, and I hope you do that, because you have a rather biased view of how the world works, and you simply don't understand the science, the economics, or the politics and where this leads. So while you might, and you are, the authority in terms of questions of doctrine for the Catholic Church, you simply are not an authority on economics, science, or the politics or the road to serfdom that has led to the deaths of over 100 million people. With that, I'd like to play America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.